Hello and welcome to the Footvey English podcast in collaboration with World Football Index, a unique mix of fandom and journalism. Footvey English is your one-stop shop for all things Venezuelan football in the English language, from the men's to the women's and the domestic leagues to the national teams.
Welcome back to the Footvey English podcast. We have had an unintended hiatus, so there is a bit to catch up on before we get into the main topic of today's episode, which is the start of the World Cup qualifiers for 2026. Dominic is with me, as he pretty much always is. Dominic, how are you?
Very well. Nice to be here.
And we've had the season, the Liga Footvey season restart since we were last together. And we're only five or six games away from the end of the regular season before the top four breakaway for the championship round. How's the table looking at the moment, Dominic?
It's looking interesting, needless to say. You know, at the top four, which of course are the Libertadores positions, you have Academia Puerto Cabello still ahead after their sort of initial thrust up the table. They got 51 points in first place. Deportivo Táchira, sort of the closest team to them, 49 points in second place. And then for those last two spots in the top four is sort of a big battle right now. Caracas and Carabobo are the current teams as of recording, holding those two spots, both with 40 points. But Portuguesa, La Guaira, even Metro, there's a couple teams that are sort of in the mix for those. And then, of course, at the bottom, we have had a pretty interesting sort of relegation race, certainly more interesting than some seasons where it's been a little more clear early on who's going down. Currently, Mineros are the team holding that bottom spot with 14 points, but they've certainly been in the mix with teams like UCV, Hermanos, Zamora even, who are all, you know, right now somewhere between like 5 and 8 points ahead of them. So, you know, it's an interesting table, I think, this season. I think there's been a few surprises at the top, at the bottom, in the middle. So I think it's kept everyone quite entertained.
Yeah, and the amazing thing about Puerto Cabello's lead at the top of the table is, firstly, they've been top the entire season from match day one, although we know that means nothing at the end of the regular season because the top four break away, the table sort of resets for the top four, and it's the top two of the top four that then play a one-legged final. But even more impressive, I think, than the fact that they've been first place since day one is they've managed to hold it despite the fact that Deportivo Táchira and Carabobo are on 17 and 16 game unbeaten streaks. Like, so was Puerto Cabello's dominance in the first third to first half of the season is they've been able to hold on to that despite massive long unbeaten runs, not just by one, but by two teams. Whereas Puerto Cabello, after winning those first eight games of the season, have lost four in their last 15. For me, towards the bottom of the table, like you said, Mineros adrift, but I was a little bit more interested in those teams just above that I didn't have much expectation for, in particular Rayo Zuliano, who as of last week are now talking in their social media about like a hunt to qualify for Copa Sudamericana. It would be a qualification for the Sudamericana in their first season in the top flight, which we saw from Hermanos Colmenares two seasons back, but in a different format. But also, what's interesting is Rayo Zuliano aren't a team that were promoted to the top flight on merit, as it were. They bought their place from Zulia. And they are neck and neck with the Estudiantes on 29 points for that eighth place position. So they, you know, very much in their hands to qualify. But I'm hoping that Monagas continue their resurge. They're now five games unbeaten. This is the team that were subcampeones last year. They finished second. They're currently 10th on 29 points. A disappointing season. A team that were in the group stages of Copa Libertadores. So I'm hoping that they're sneaking ahead of Rayo Zuliano in the top eight. But as you said, the top four race, well, the race for third and fourth, really, first and second are essentially, well, first is secure. Táchira are about to secure second place. Is very interesting. Just 5 points separate third from seventh. 40 points and 35 points being the range. And two places up for grabs for Copa Libertadores football out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams. So that will keep the last six games of the season very busy. But the real reason that we are here today is to preview the World Cup qualifiers. Dominic, since the World Cup qualifiers for 2022 finished, there hasn't been any competitive football. The Copa America is next year. So in its place, Venezuela have played 10 friendlies. They won 7, drawn 2, and lost 1. But the opposition haven't been the strongest. I think it's fair to say the strongest opposition they've faced is Iceland and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, based on the fact that this is a team that were in the World Cup, got a result against Argentina, and Iceland, the team that were in the Euro 2016 and World Cup 2018. Saudi Arabia were beaten twice, and Iceland was the one loss in 10, a 1-0 defeat back in October 2022. The World Cup qualifiers were starting with Colombia away, followed by Paraguay at home, and the selection was announced yesterday. How are you feeling about those first two fixtures and World Cup qualification in general?
I think it's an interesting pair of games to start the campaign with because it's two teams in Colombia and Paraguay that both feel like approachable games. Sometimes with international windows, you'll have a team that, you play the worst team and the best team, or you play, a sort of mismatched selection of teams. With Colombia and Paraguay, I think you have two teams that are in their own forms of transition, the same way Venezuela are to some degree. Teams that I think you can go into these games feeling that there are points possible, and so for me that is a great way to open the journey. In terms of the campaign as a whole, I mean, I think this 2026 qualifying campaign, this is as big an opportunity Venezuela has ever had to qualify for the World Cup, because of the place expansion, because of Ecuador's 3-point deduction. There are so many little things that line up for this is about as good of a shot as you're ever going to have if you're not one of the mainstays of South America to qualify for a World Cup. The form has been good. You mentioned the friendlies. Admittedly, not always the best opposition. I'm curious, to see how that does translate into competitive games, only in the sense that I think you can make the argument both ways about playing especially high-level teams and friendlies, and whether that actually translates into anything. I mean, I think of the previous qualifying campaign prior to his dismissal. Dudamel had Venezuela playing some quite high-level countries and friendlies, and then the competitive game started, and it translated into nothing. So it's maybe there's something to playing more approachable games in the friendly cycle to just get more minutes, more touches, more passes, more wins. Into the system, into the players, into the coach. And so maybe there's something to that. That's more hypothetical than anything else. But yeah, I think there's a huge opportunity. I think these are two games that Venezuela can walk into thinking there are points here for us to get. And I think getting some points in these two games is incredibly important to setting the tone for this campaign, because I think mentality and tone are going to be a huge asset, a huge factor for Venezuela being able to build any sort of momentum and putting in good performances overall through the campaign. I think that momentum, that tone, that energy is going to be so important to this team staying competitive, staying in games as this, drawn out process plays out.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out that this World Cup campaign was supposed to begin with Peckerman in charge, and we didn't even get close to that. He resigned way before the campaign due to begin, possibly even before the fixture list was released for it. But we do have some continuity in the fact that Borja Batista, who was his understudy, his assistant for the national team, and was in charge of the some of the youth teams, is now in that role. And as you said, a good thing about the friendlies that we've had is sorry, good thing about the friendlies, as you said, was we've also had the opportunity to build consistency. Winning 7 out of 10 games is good for momentum, is good for morale, and we've also got players that are in good moments at club level. Josef Martinez's game has improved. His form has improved since the arrival of Messi, and the reunited status of him and Tata Martino as a head coach. Yan Gehl is in a good moment, although it will see remain to be seen how many minutes he'll get, particularly in the first game, considering injury concerns, similarly with Soteldo, but also called up. Christian Cáceres has recently arrived to France to Toulouse and is starting, is playing well. And then in the back line, we've got Jordan Osorio increasing in prominence in Serie B with Parma, had the captain's armband the other week. And then we've also got John Aramburu, who, although is playing at a lower level, had a very good season last year in Spain. There was interest, confirmed interest from Feyenoord in Holland. And in the end, Real Sociedad bought him, a top flight team, although he is beginning with the B team. So I think just as important as the momentum that perhaps that run of lesser opposition friendlies has provided, we've also got the benefit of players in good individual moments at club level. Rondon even coming back into the goals. He scored 5 of the 15 goals we've scored in the last 10 games. So a third of the goals continue to come from the record scorer of Venezuela. Dominic, we start with Colombia away, Paraguay at home. I guess in an ideal world, we're aiming for, well, obviously 6 points in an ideal world, but maybe in a realistic ideal world, 4 points is probably what the coaches are thinking about. A draw in Colombia and a win at home against Paraguay?
Yeah, I think that's probably the grounded, hopeful situation. I think of those two games, I think if you're going to even bare bones it down further, I think the immediate is getting that win at home. Starting, you know, it's the second game, but getting that win against Paraguay at home in Maturin, in front of the crowd, getting in that first window a win in front of your home fans, I think at the bare bones, that is sort of that bar of it, whether you meet that or not kind of determines if it's a positive window. Getting that extra point or three at Colombia then is kind of, I think, what turns it into a complete window, a great window. But getting that win at home, to me, I think is the opportunity to define the window for this group. It's just the kind of thing, you know, to qualify for a World Cup in this kind of group that Conmebol provides, you have to get those points at home. You just have to. If you don't, you have to have amazing road form to compensate for it. But for most teams, it's those home points that seal the deal. So starting off with a win against a team like Paraguay, who you would expect to not necessarily thrive in this qualification cycle either, that to me is the bare bones goal. But yeah, 4 points I think should be the sort of grounded but hopeful target.
And we often talk around these kinds of times, you know, what we think our strongest 11 or expected 11 would be. But actually, I think aside from that, there's a debate on who's going to be our starting goalkeeper, which probably is a less of a debate normally. Obviously, Wilker Fariñez is still on the road to recovery from his serious injury, hopefully towards the end of that road. But we're left with Gratterol, who probably has been the undisputed number two for some years now, Alain Baroja at Caracas, and Rafael Romo, who's playing his football in Ecuador at Universidad. So we've got three goalies who have all made starts for the Venezuela national team in 2023. But who are you expecting to see start against Colombia? And do you think there is much difference between the three?
Well, your difference is an interesting question. I mean, obviously, two of these guys, and actually particularly Baroja, of the three, maybe a little more experienced in the grand scheme of things than, say, Gratterol. I think it's hard to know, it's hard to predict what choices will be made by the individuals in charge. I think the sort of on-paper one that feels the most possible to me is actually Rafael Romo. One, because he started the last friendly, that to me means something. Two, he's one of the big differentiators right now is just who's playing minutes. Gratterol is not playing minutes particularly right now in Greece. He's been on the bench. And then obviously you have Baroja and Romo. Romo has been playing very well in Ecuador. I checked his current record for the season the other day. I think in the last like 15 games, he's had like 3 losses. He's got a bunch of clean sheets. He's had a good form there, playing a similar sort of week-to-week amount of minutes as Baroja, but to me, then you maybe slightly lean towards the person not playing in Liga Footvé, who also has more recent higher level experience in, say, Europe. That's sort of a pragmatic sort of series of decisions for me. But to me, I maybe slightly lean to Romo, who also, you said Gratterol has kind of been the number two for a while. That's certainly true. Romo has kind of been the guy competing for that with him in the last several years, while Fringes was number one. So I just see Romo as maybe the one that sneaks in there. It's a weird one because it's three guys that have plenty of pluses, but there's also kind of question marks. Not necessarily the person you'd ideally be placing in goal for World Cup qualifiers in any direction. So it's a weird decision to have to be made, but I would slightly lean towards Rafael Romo.
Yeah, in this moment, me too. Gratterol with only five competitive games in 2023. But like I said before, that sort of undisputed number two, and probably was looking to seize the moment with Farinez out injured, but it's not gone that way at club level, which has a knock-on effect to the national team. My one hope is that we have a set number one and we stick with it. It wouldn't be nice to see chopping and changing. Because firstly, if you chop and change, probably it's because there's been a bad performance, which none of us want for the individual or the country. And if there's not been a bad change, it's just that there's no clear number one, which I don't think is ever healthy. But Romo came up in the group chat, one of the group chats I'm in this week. A couple of Ecuadorians have said that he's in a really good place. They'd like to see him start. They expect him to start. Obviously, we're not playing Ecuador, so they don't have that to worry about. But something else that was brought up in the same group chat by a friend of Football English, Ralph Hannah, who's part of the Guarani Vision podcast, is apparently Paraguay at the moment are weak at set pieces, as in they're conceding both goals and opportunities from set pieces. So I had a look at the numbers, and in our 15 goals in the 10 friendlies, four came from set pieces, be it free kicks or corners. A fifth came from a penalty, and a sixth came from the second phase of a free kick taken from our own half. So it does look like that may be a positive source of goals or chances against Paraguay. And another thing that sort of ties into that is we have John Chancellor, who has scored a fair few goals for the national team in recent years, as well as Jordan Osorio and Mikel Villanueva, all with some serious height to them. As always, or seemingly in the 5 years I've been following, no, 6 years I've been following the senior national team, there seems to be a left back dilemma at national team level. And I expect against Paraguay, perhaps this is where we see Villanueva being used as an auxiliary left back for his height, for his set piece threat, if not probably Luis Mago. Aside from set pieces, if you were picking out where you see our goal threat coming from and looking at the players that have been called up, what are you predicting? What should opposition defenses and fans be worried about?
Well, gosh, I mean, when you're making that kind of bet, it feels silly not to at least put a little bit of the chips on Solomon Rondon to score. Certainly he is a huge option still up front for Venezuela. Even if his club form is not necessarily what it was a couple of years ago, it's still certainly at a respectable level, producing more than even some of the other players on this forwards list. I would be curious to see what we can see from Soteldo in this break. Obviously, there was reporting by him and others about his condition with his ankle, I believe. I know there was question marks about whether he would even be called up. He obviously has been called up. If he is going to play an active role in these games, then he immediately becomes a huge part of the conversation about how Venezuela create goals in these two games. We saw recently in his sort of return to Santos, which unfortunately was right before his injury, came off the bench and I think assisted both goals in a 2-1 comeback win in a matter of like 20 minutes. This is a guy that just, it's no secret, this isn't news, can create and score amazing goals. Scored the winner in one of our last friendlies, I think the Honduras game, he scored in that one. If he's available, then instantly the sort of conversation of chance creation, goal creation changes into how can we get the most magic out of Soteldo? Can the other team manage him? I think all of that, you've alluded to this, is parallel to an interesting conversation about who starts up front. We have multiple strikers who are all sort of in various sorts of decent form. It's worth mentioning Alejandro Marquez is actually doing quite well at Estoril in Portugal, where he's been doing well. I don't necessarily expect him to start any of these games, but it'll be interesting to see if he can get some minutes, maybe do something off the bench. Sergio Cordova has had an up and down time at Vancouver recently, did quite well in Leeds Cup, actually. But an overall play this season hasn't produced much. So two guys that are probably going to be the supporting roles that you kind of go, well, maybe these guys can come in for 15 minutes and do something. I think the Joseph Martinez, Solomon Rondon dynamic, who starts, who plays, how many minutes, what's the formation, how do they play, if they play together. Those questions are unclear to me and probably affected by some of the availability of other players. But I think nonetheless, I see the talent there for this team to produce goals up front, not just from a center back heading in a corner kick, but from open play. I see the potential for these guys to produce.
And to end on the new faces to look out for, we've got, unless I'm very much mistaken, a first-time call-up for Jesus Bueno. He's in a good moment with Philadelphia Union at club level. And not their first call-ups, but their first exposure to competitive football for La Vino Tinto on the continent. We've got John Aramburu, as I alluded to earlier, can play anywhere across the back line in theory, but in reality has solidified himself as a right-back in the past 12 to 18 months. And then up front, we have Marquez, who, again, you alluded to earlier in the podcast, who has shown some bright moments in the friendlies that he's featured in. There was a bit of sort of a will he, won't he over whether he'd actually ever represent Venezuela. But he's tied his flag to the mast and he's on board for World Cup qualification. But obviously, there's a competitive department there with Rondon, obviously the talisman. Joseph Martinez, probably second choice striker if we play a one-man system and we don't line up with both. But we did see both of them on at least two occasions dovetail very nicely in the friendly. So it'd be interesting to see if we, probably not in Colombia, but perhaps in Venezuela against Paraguay, get to see the two of them pair up. So let's end the podcast with a bit of fun, bit of prediction. I'll go first. I'm going to go that we lose away to Colombia. And I think we're going to get a win to Paraguay. I'm going to go 2-0 loss to Colombia and 2-1 win against Paraguay.
Okay, I'm going to be I feel like I always play this role in everything I'm on. I'm going to be the slight optimist. I'm going to say draw Colombia. I'll say 1-1. And a win against Paraguay, I actually think the same, 2-1 against Paraguay. So I guess I'll be the optimist with the 4 points from the window, 1-1 and 2-1.
And one thing I'm really looking forward to actually is the game in Paraguay the game against Paraguay, sorry, is going to be held in Maturin. And we can expect a pretty good attendance for that. It's a lovely stadium. It's around 40,000. And we've seen it close to sold out on one or two occasions this season when a Monagas played there for Copa Libertadores against Boca Juniors, for example. So that will also be a nice big attendance, not a game that I'll be able to get to on account of it being midweek and not in Caracas. But obviously we'll very much be watching. Dominic, thank you for your return to the Foot the English podcast. Sorry that we've been away for so long. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.